Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
So, welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And today we are joined by Jude Rogers. Jude, for the people at home, not for Jude, you already know who you are. Jude is a writer, a journalist, a mother, and you've written for heaps of things. Heaps of really cool things.
Is that a women's magazine? Heaps of things.
Heaps of things, that's right. You've written for really cool publications like The Guardian, The Telegraph, Marie Claire Red, The New Statesman, Vice, Q, Kin, The Pool, and you say, and anybody else that asks nicely.
But I'm also, in brackets, and pays generally.
And pays, yes.
Very important.
And so your specialisation, you write about lots of different things, but you have mainly written about music in your career, yes?
Yes, I started off writing about music mainly. I was in my mid-20s, so I basically wanted to go out to gigs every night and interview lots of, you know, sexy boys in indie bands. I'm now 37, less interested in that.
Fair enough.
Who's the best person you've ever interviewed?
Best person, probably Tony Bennett.
Oh.
Just because it was amazing sitting next to somebody, you know, like him. Older people are always better to interview as well. You know, they have proper life stories and they don't care as much about, you know, looking cool. Don't interview a 22-year-old who thinks he's the next big thing. Really, really boring.
Right.
Worst interview, Alex Turner from the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Just really rude and really unpleasant and...
I hate the youth.
Yes. And I like the Arctic Monkeys and I liked him. I think he's a great lyricist. No, he was horrible.
Get back to the Arctic.
Yes. Take your monkeys with you. He was awful. I'm sure he's very nice. Have you listening, Alex? I'm sure
you
are.
No, you're not. You just said he's an arsehole. I don't know how much I believe that, dude.
Yeah, he was very nice to me on that day. Maybe he got out the wrong way. No, Tony Bennett was amazing. Oh, gosh, it sounds funny. There's been lots of people who are amazing in different ways. It's generally people you don't expect.
Kylie, can we talk
about Kylie Minogue? Yeah, Kylie Minogue was pretty amazing. Now, that was quite stressful because she doesn't really say anything in interviews ever, and I knew this, but I started by saying that I knew her mum was Welsh. We just started talking about Wales, and she tried to speak in Welsh to me.
Oh.
And tried to say the really long place name in Anglesey, which you might have heard.
Isn't it funny when Australians try and do like British accents? It's hilarious, isn't it? It's so funny. They cannot do it.
But Kylie is tiny, and I have a brilliant picture of her. I was seven months pregnant when I interviewed her, and there's a picture of her next to my baby bump. You know, the baby bump is bigger than her, but she did pat it.
She blessed it. Your baby was blessed by Kylie.
I should have called him Jason.
And I also noted you interviewed Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
Ooh.
On my honeymoon.
That sounds like a good honeymoon.
Yes. Three of us all together. I interviewed him for Elle in 2011. I was called by my editor asking if I'd come back from my honeymoon. I hadn't, but she said, oh, I was in New York next week. And I was in New York next week, so I had to kind of sidle up to my husband and say, Dan, you know, when we're in Manhattan having this amazing romantic time, do you mind if I slip off for an hour and interview somebody who I think is really quite sexy? And I did, and I did interview Justin Timberlake, who was quite disappointing.
Oh, really?
Very cold.
Oh.
Not particularly exciting. Thought he was really hot and amazing, which, you know, I suppose he is in many ways. Yeah, but Kylie great, Justin not so great. But there we are.
What about Madonna? Have you ever come close?
No, and I don't think I'd want to.
Do
to
you?
Be honest.
Why?
No, I'm too scared.
Yeah.
Madonna and Morrissey, I think people I've both loved in my life, I don't really love them as much now in their older years when they've they're not as good as they used to be, is all I should say, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, she'd have no chuck with that.
Yeah, I shouldn't have chuck with slipped. That. But I have interviewed, like, some people I really loved. I interviewed Michael Stipe, who was my... when I was a teenager, I always fancied pop stars who ended up, turned out to be gay, which is quite weird. Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys, Michael Stipe, you know, certain kind of, you know, basically just miserable, intelligent man with nice eyes. Interviewed Michael Stipe, and that was terrifying. But he was lovely, and so that was good. And at the end of that year, I remember somebody said to me, what was the best thing that happened to you this year? And I said, I interviewed Michael Stipe. And then my husband piped up, we got married in April.
Hooray for me.
Yeah. No, but I know what you mean about being scared of Madonna. That's why we won't have her on the podcast, isn't it?
No,
she's always texting, go, oh, can I, I'll just come on and talk about my new single, and we say, no, we're frightened of you, fuck off. Yeah, every week.
Should we move on to our first segment?
Oh, yes. What is it?
It's called Motherhood Chat.
Oh, yes. What a radical departure for this podcast.
I know.
Love it.
We're breaking walls down here. We really are. So should we just start off, Jude, by asking you about your family? Tell us about who your family are.
So my family, there's me, there's Dan, my husband, we've been together a long time, and our little boy, Evan, who is nearly 18 months.
Named after the dando?
No, although everybody thinks that is. I did love the dando a lot, and I did interview the dando. Still hot. Still hot.
Love
but
it.
I don't want my son to turn up like the dando, because that means he'll be nearly 50 and still smoking dope every day, and that's, I don't want that to happen.
No, write that down.
Is that a legal problem now? He was doing it in the room. No, I saw him.
But yeah, has motherhood been kind of what you expected it to be, Jude?
I don't know what I expected. I knew I thought I'd be a good mum. Early on, it was just more surreal than, you know, it was hard. Of course it was hard. And everybody says, it's really hard at the beginning when you're pregnant. You think, yeah, I know, I'm not an idiot. You know, I know it's not going to be a breeze. But it's just very surreal. You're just thinking, how do people survive on this little sleep and just sort of go on? But you do, you sort of get these resources from somewhere. And, you know, just have a house full of washing. And that's just the way it is.
It's your spirit animal, that's where you get it from. No, I just wanted to see your face. I didn't see what you say.
What's my spirit animal?
Well, Taylor knows me because she immediately just started laughing, but you were like, oh my god, what have I done? Why have I come on this podcast?
You know, people say so many things to you about it, and at this point you think, oh, you know, enjoy them when they're little. It kind of it gets hard as they get older. And I actually, then people say, oh, it gets easier as they get older, and you're like, what is it? I don't know, you know.
What gets you through on the tough days, which are, you know, we all have? What are your sort of secret weapons for surviving motherhood?
On the days I have him, when he's really whiny, Bing on CBeebies on the iPlayer.
I thought you meant the unpopular Microsoft search engine for a minute. I was very confused.
Yeah, he's very advanced.
What, the Crosby? He likes some smooth jazz.
Yeah, no, we like a bit of Bing.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, but it's quite bad. It's got quite bad now because I try not, like a good mum, to, you know, just put him in front of the telly when I get up in the morning when I'm exhausted. And I try and, you know, leave him with his toys and get him to do different things. But, you know, some mornings, you know, you need Bing. He likes rice cakes. He's got to have one in each hand, otherwise he gets really annoyed.
Oh, I love their crazy food. Little.
That's like me and
like
wine. You've got to balance it out.
From when I was he was very little, I did try and just get out as soon as possible. I was one of those mums that, you know, I wasn't a nester, just like, oh, we must be in our beautiful home. I was like, no, let's just get out and take you somewhere so I can have a conversation with a human being, so I don't feel completely.
Weatherspoons.
Yes.
No, you wrote this article in Kin magazine about how you love in the middle of the night, you can just stare into your iPhone, and you sort of thinking about, you know, mothers before the magic, you know, iPhone, that you, what were they doing in the middle of the night, breastfeeding their kids?
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, it's really good having some, being able to have chats and send messages to fellow mums, especially when you've got a really little baby, especially in the middle of the night, and, you know, you've got this child clamped to your boob for about an hour. And, you know, you don't have to rest the phone in the head, you know, so you've got free hand. And it's actually, it is good, and I needed something to keep my brain going then. You know, Google can also be evil and make you Google everything that's slightly different, you know.
Well, that's why you prefer Bing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. But, yeah, do not Google anything about your child's health, because it will drive you insane, and everybody will say, it's your fault. But yeah, kind of, I found it amazing that, you know, mums could just stare into space for hours and not do anything, you know, kind of...
That's because in the 60s they were just on gin. They were just in a gin coma.
That's right, yes. And also they had a fag in that free hand as well, don't forget. You know.
That's right.
I think times are different.
That's it.
Exactly.
Although
there's something really true in that, you know, because we're so used to having all this stimulation now, which is great as, you know, grown women, and we can find out anything we like, we can make friends online, we can get to know people, we can find out what, you know, people like you and Scummy Mummies. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. But then when you have a baby, you could have... You almost, you know, your brain is still kind of doing that, but it's just doing it all to this little kind of life source that kind of doesn't really respond and is quite mad. So you almost need to kind of have that correspondence with, you know,
other mad people
to keep it going. It's really, I just tried to start, you know, reading things. I remember when he was a little bit older, just starting to, I got a Kindle, and that was really good to try and just, even if it's reading a couple of pages of a book, and I just stop thinking about the baby and you being a mum and just kind of go into another world and read something different. That's actually really good for you to just get out of the headspace. Yeah, definitely.
Are you listening, Amazon? Send us all your Kindles.
Yes, please. Yes. Well, and pay your tax, by the way. Anyway.
But don't get rid of Prime. We really like it.
Yeah. That's you, told. The world's number one online retailer. Yes. Look forward to hearing your new policy change, Dr. Very good. So you wrote another article recently about how having a child has made you sort of focus a bit more and has actually been quite good for your career in that respect. Would you say that?
Yeah, it's funny. I find I'm doing as much freelancing now that I was doing before I had Evan, but just on a lot less time. Yeah, I'm the kind of person that I need to be doing 300 things to be happy anyway. I'm just one of those people.
Do you like a list, Jude?
I do like a list, yes. But they're usually not crossed off at the end.
Right. Yeah,
the list develops subsections and branches and it goes a bit mental.
Have you tried bullet journaling?
Oh, what's that?
Oh, you'll love it. I won't go into it now because people will turn off in their droves. But Google it or Bing it later. It's good. It's my new thing.
Ellie will show you her book later with great pride, like a child who's just drawn a picture of a fire truck.
But yeah, just kind of... Yeah. You just get on with it. You realise how much you love it and actually how much it's about who you are as an individual, which is really good to remind yourself when you've had a baby because you can have... You feel that person like drifting into the distance sometimes. if my son goes to nap and I can have 10 minutes just kind of working out where I am with my work and all that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, cool, that's me, that's what I'm doing. Now I'll do some more laundry.
But do you struggle? Because I struggle because of being freelance as well. I struggle a bit with like... Because I'm like you, I want to do loads of things and I like having loads of things on the go. But then often like I'm trying to do a bit of work, but I'm feeling guilty because, you know, you've stuck him in front of Bing. Or, you know, I am playing with my son, but I can't, my mind is like still finishing that blog post. Yeah. Or like, how do you cope with that?
Yeah, I do find that quite hard. And it's very hard not to check your emails when you're a freelancer because people don't call you anymore. They just email you and expect you to drop everything, including the baby, and answer. What I try and do is, if we're going somewhere, like say we're going to Toddler Sense, and there's a bit long road between me and Leytonstone, I'll just check my emails while I'm pushing him in the buggy, and I'll say to him, "Mammy's checking her emails now. Guess all the wonder who this is from." So I try and do those things when I feel like it doesn't matter because he's looking at a tree or something, or he's, you know, got his rice cakes in his hand or something like that. But yeah, it is hard. I remember reading something when I first started going back to work on an American website about, you know, the freelance with a homeworking mum and how she lives her life. And basically it was like, you get up, you give them some breakfast, you let them play for 2 hours while you work, they have a nap, then they have their lunch, and then they play again on their own for 2 hours, and then you do some more. It's like, in what world can you do 4 hours work and you've got a baby? Because obviously they just sit there, you know. Is this kid's had a lobotomy or something? You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's just insane. I'm lucky that my editor of The Observer, who's amazing, she's got 2 sons who are a little bit older now, but she knows exactly how it is. And she's done brilliant things like, you know, there's an interview she wants on the phone, she wants somebody to do, and she's realised, oh, it's at 8 o'clock at night. Oh, Jude can do that because Evan will be in bed by then. You feel like you don't want to kind of bang on too much the entrance, like, oh, I've got all kids, because obviously loads of people have got kids. But if you have people understanding, that helps a lot. And so I generally try and pitch my work or kind of be in touch with the editors who are going to be more responsive to that.
So you've written about music a lot and also about parenthood, but one particular aspect of motherhood you've spoken about recently was miscarriage, which you wrote about in The Pool and also previously in Grazia. And both articles got this enormous response. Was that something you were quite surprised about? Like,
it's funny, kind of, I was... It might sound silly, but I was hopeful that I would get a response because I think basically when I wrote it, it was Baby Loss Awareness Week, and the Miscarriage Association, which is this brilliant organisation that really helped me when I miscarried my first pregnancy. I was 7 weeks pregnant when I miscarried, and started talking to friends about it. You know, I found friends, you know, quite. Not my best friend, or people I thought I knew quite a lot about, who'd miscarried and hadn't talked about it. And of course, it's your own prerogative. You want to kind of grieve privately, that's absolutely fine. But I, you know, with a few people, there was a sense that they would have liked to have talked about it. And there's still that 12-week thing, which, you know, it's such a pressure. You know, it's like, you know, who is that for? You know, that you shouldn't tell anybody before 12 weeks pregnant. It's not for you, it's for other people, because they won't know what to do if you lose the baby. There's kind of not, it's just not talked about in a way that's particularly helpful. You know, I was very lucky that when I got pregnant the second time, which was a pregnancy which I had my son, I had a lovely doctor, male doctor, who was brilliant, and he said when I was pregnant again, you know, I tell you, you know, it's a pregnancy, but, you know, this might happen and that might happen. I'm not saying this because you miscarried before, but this is something I tell everybody. I thought, I wish people just were a bit more open about the fact that pregnancies don't necessarily end in this, you know, this baby. In fact,
it's 1 in 4, I think.
Yeah, there's the NHS say 1 in 5, but I've read quite a few studies that say 1 in 4. Mm. You know, so that is,
which I never knew before I got pregnant. And then you get the literature and you're like, oh, right, actually, you know.
And then you start doing the usual things that I wrote about in my pool piece. You know, even if you're a very sensible, rational, intelligent woman, which of course I am, of course. I mean, people who are a lot more sensible, rational, intelligent than me, they still feel guilt and shame that somehow it may be something they have done. You know, when I had I lost a baby when I was 5 weeks pregnant, I'd been to Norway because I was going to this music conference in which I was interviewing Nena Cherry, and I wasn't going to miss that. And you know, I took it very easily. It was icy up there, barely left the hotel, you know, and I ended up, you know, having to tell a few people I was pregnant because I'm thinking, well, what's wrong with her? And I was just like, oh, I must have been that. And it was just ridiculous because it's not, you know, being out till midnight is not going to make you lose a baby. And I was taking care of myself and doing all the usual stuff. But yeah, there's people who don't take care of themselves at all and have, you know, healthy full-term babies. Mm. But you just kind of, I think it's partly as well the generation we are that, you know, and as women we expect, you know, lives to kind of be logical and be able to, we can solve problems for ourselves because we have all these resources. And if something happens to us outside that, and pregnancy and motherhood, you know, it's not like that. You've got to sort of be adaptable and just let things go sometimes. But, you know, it's funny that women have to almost be quiet and keep, you know...
Yeah, I'm not sure about that whole 12-week thing, because I feel... And it becomes like a superstitious thing. And I sort of hate superstition generally. I think it's really weird. And I remember, like, being pregnant with Charlie, and I told, like, my parents and, like... I think maybe two close friends, and one of them I told him, and he said, wow, that's amazing. I said, don't tell anyone because of the 12 weeks. And he was like, oh, I almost wish you hadn't told me. And I said, why? And he said, well, what if something goes wrong? And I said, well, if something goes wrong, I'm going to be really upset. And as one of my closest friends, I'm not going to be able to hide it from you anyway. So I'll tell you that something's gone wrong, and then hopefully you'll help me deal with it. I feel like it's weird that we've created that, and I don't know how useful it is. I'm not sure.
I think a lot of people are like that as well. And, I think because, you know, this, it's a very difficult sort of loss, and I wrote about that as well. You know, you're grieving, and you're, you know, something has died, but it's, you know, we also are from this generation of women, you know, that we, you know, we don't necessarily think of, you know, embryos as babies, especially if we're pro-choice. We think, you know, this is, you know, a collection of cells, or it's not, you know, but, you know, I had, you know, the baby from my first pregnancy was 3 centimetres long and had a fetal pole. But we don't know if there was ever a heartbeat. But still, there was a start of something. And as I wrote in the piece, it's not necessarily just about that creature, whatever you want to call it, but it's about, you know, the life that you've projected ahead. You know, you think, oh, wow, you know, I got pregnant at the end of January, and I didn't think I was pregnant. I was convinced I wasn't pregnant that month. And I was very surprised to find out. And then I thought, oh, the end of the year, we'll have a baby. We'll have Christmas, the baby. And then that next Christmas, we didn't have a baby. You know, I was pregnant again, but I remember thinking about it a lot. You know, we could have had it, you know, and I always think of that other, you know, don't always think about it. I'm, you know, I don't think about it very often now, but that week I did think about it, you know, God, what might have happened? And, and I think it's good to talk about these things because, you know, obviously it ended because something wasn't right and that's obviously fine, but it's amazing that people don't feel like that, you know, it's something about shame and guilt and about responsibility, and it's not your fault. And
yeah, and it's about that woman's things, like, you know,
and
people still don't want to talk about if they're having a hysterectomy or they're having problems conceiving, all that sort of stuff. That is that woman's shame that you have to. There's something terribly wrong with you
because you're not a proper woman.
The barren woman. You're not the, you know, wide hips, you know, babies falling out of you, you know, childbearing woman. And there's you know, that association. But it's, it can be very difficult.
They're very difficult things to talk about. But, you know, we've got to the point in our lives where we know being a woman is not to do with where you have ovaries and boobs, even, you know, kind of all things are functioning. We know that. But when we get to these issues of fertility, suddenly we just go back decades somehow. And as I said, in the piece, and a few people have picked up on this line, you know, it's amazing how mean we are to ourselves when we're at our weakest, how we kind of blame ourselves when we're at our weakest. I find it interesting talking to previous generations about it. My mother had definitely had one miscarriage, probably two, but you know, they weren't really talked about then as well. But in some ways, motherhood, people were a lot less anxious about certain things because I guess, you know, we want our babies to be really well, and we want all these expectations for them, and people are slightly lower expectations then, I think, because, you know, I don't know, there's lots of pressures that women put on themselves now, and I think this is why that the issue of miscarriage.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Still a big issue.
I know you've mentioned in the article about friends didn't talk to you about your miscarriage and stuff. Do you think
I found that really hard?
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm the kind of person that really appreciated friends saying, do you want to have a chat or do you want to come for a drink or something like that. You know, I just wanted to be around people. I had a few friends who I basically sent an email a couple of days after it had happened to friends saying, you know, this has happened, because I just didn't want to call up everybody individually. And a few of them didn't know I was pregnant, and I had a couple of friends just emailed me and said, oh god, I'm really sorry, blah, blah, blah. But you know, the friends, you realise who your friends are. Like, some of them just phoned me straight away, oh my god, do you want me to come over, do you want to come out tomorrow, do you want me to come around and make some food? And that was brilliant, you know, that. And even if we didn't, it was the gesture. I think people don't really know, they're so worried about how they should respond and whether they should be saying the wrong thing. A lot of these people just think, you know, just talk to me. You know, it doesn't matter if you say the wrong thing, just saying something is actually quite important.
I think it is frightening, though. I've never had a miscarriage, though. Of course, I know people who've had them. Yeah. And I am frightened of what to say, because I feel like there's nothing I can say, of course, that is really going to make it better. There's nothing I can say that's going to change anything or change how they feel about it. So then I'm frightened that I would say something equally insensitive without meaning to that would just, you know, really upset someone.
A few friends of mine said the Miscarriage Association did a campaign during this Baby Loss Awareness Week to write something on a piece of paper to thank somebody who'd done something. And I've got friends, Catherine and Ruth, who both said to me separately, do you want to talk about it? And I said, yeah, just over a drink or something. We went out for a drink and it was lovely. And they didn't even know each other that well, but we just chatted. And, you know, and I remember, I think it was Catherine said, you know, if I say anything that's really insensitive, do tell me. And, you know, obviously, I might say the wrong thing, you know. And just saying that helps because, you know, some people would say, you know, at least, you know, you can get pregnant, which some people can find helpful, some people find really unhelpful because, you know, you could get pregnant 10 times and miscarry every time. Basically, if it's a friend of yours, you know, just think about how they are normally and how they react to things normally and just read that, I guess. The best people was a friend of mine who had her first baby a week after I miscarried. And I obviously wanted to go around and see them. And I was just, you could imagine, I was just really worried about how I'd be. And we were talking, I saw him and saw her, we were chatting and... And she was just, the first thing she said is, like, how are you doing? She said, thank you for coming over. And she said, you know, if this gets hard, you know, I don't mind, you know, but, you know, we want to do what's best for you, whatever. And she asked me if I wanted to hold him, and I said, I did. And I held him, and I just started to cry. And it was really hard. And she said, do you want me to take him? I said, no, I'll give him a little cuddle, because he's lovely. And though people will be going through a really, really tough time, and they will be having to work it out, just giving them a little bit of... you know, a hand on the shoulder is, you know, you don't have to have, you know, long protracted conversations unless they really want to. But just that phrase, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
What I find really helpful. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But, you know, kind of talking about how people don't talk about it actually helped me, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, keeping... not ignoring it completely, because I think the complete ignorance of it is when it's very, very hard pretending it's not happened, because it has happened.
That's it. Well, there we are. A little bit less jolly than some of the topics we're going to cover on the podcast. But no, like you say, I think it's good to talk about it. Again, finally eradicating the last vestiges of serious empathy. But that's basically your advice, to keep talking about and to ask people if they want to talk about it and let them take the lead.
Definitely. And don't worry if you're worried about being insensitive, just, you know, maybe say to them, you know, if I'm insensitive, then call me an arsehole or something.
Times a day.
Or I'll say, maybe if I sing about it, it'll be less offensive.
Well, let's have the next section of the podcast.
Yeah, let's move on.
Now, according to your website, Jude, which is juderogers.com, it says, I've done a radiophonic workshop with Paul McCartney, been made a cup of tea by Robert Plant, shared a Pret salad with Bjork. What salad was it?
It was a mackerel. Oh. It was a fancy Pret in New York.
They like fish, don't they, the Icelandics? Had a Barney with Ben Goldacre, been serenaded by Randy Newman, and wasn't quite sure what to do when Cat Power had a pee in front of me.
Oh, wow.
How did that come about?
Rock and roll, man.
That was when Cat Power was in London. She was nominated for a Brit. This is about 10 years ago for her album The Greatest. And, yeah, she was in a hotel room in a T-shirt and a pants. And was basically farting quite a lot and scratching around in her underwear.
It's like this podcast.
She was a bit of cold, she was in bed, that's why she wanted to be interviewed in bed. And but on the way out, it was just a hotel room, and the toilet was next to the door, and I was just leaving with her publicist next to me. And she just, you know, walked into the toilet, pulled on her pants and had a wee.
Rock and roll! And also, so yeah, you've lived quite a life as a music journalist. You've, you know, rock and roll. What's the most rock and roll thing you've ever done?
I'm not... most rock and roll thing I've ever done...
Ever thrown a telly out of a window?
No, I've never thrown a telly out of a window.
Burnt a goat? Snorted cocaine off of Betty Boo's tits?
No. If I'm late. Such a head girl. I'm kind of like, people just kind of don't, you know. I think I'm the only music journalist who's never been offered cocaine. I think that's, you know, true. I'm kind of...
Do you think they know? They look at the pop stars, they look at you and they go, no, she's too straight.
Too straight. It's a bit, isn't that awful? I like a drink.
Yeah.
So you go to a lot of gigs. You said you just went to one recently in Dublin. And, I mean, are gigs more exciting now that you're a mum? Like, the fact that you get to I think you were saying on the way here when we were chatting that you went to Kate Bush.
Yeah, I did.
You saw the bush.
I saw the bush.
In the bush.
Yeah, in the bush.
Yeah.
Twice.
Do you like Bush, Helen?
What, the band?
Sure. You were really into Bush at university.
Yeah,
courses,
not
I remember.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. You peaked in second year and then dwindled off.
Trimmed. So sorry, June. Yeah, you were saying about Kate Bush.
It's made me think of the band Bush now, which made me feel pretty ill. Yes, I saw Kate Bush. I saw her on the opening night.
Ooh.
Of her gigs. I was asked to review the gig for Pitchfork, the American music website. And so basically, see the gig on Tuesday night, write it up by 1 o'clock on Wednesday, so it's ready to go up at, you know, 9 a.m. for the American.
You're
audience.
Releasing the bush.
Yeah, releasing the bush into the wild.
Yeah.
This is when I had a 4-month-old baby.
Fuck me.
So, you know, when I was asked, it was like, yes, of course I do, because it's very exciting. But it was the first time I'd been out on my own in the evening. And I wasn't with any friends. I was getting a tube from one end of London to the other. Mm. Longest tube journey ever. Because, you know, I was so excited about going out. And as, you know, 2 seconds down the road, I was like, oh, where's my baby?
Your milk just sort of explodes.
Yeah, thankfully.
People thought it was part of Kate Bush's act. They were like, oh, that's amazing. Really, it's stagecraft, isn't it?
Here comes an emotionally unstable lactating woman.
Oh my God, yeah.
But thankfully, I was not the kind of mum that kind of did have exploding boobs. Although I did go to Denmark to interview Sophie Grabol from The Killing, and it was getting towards the end of breastfeeding. Boobs were in agony. And,
so it was like a crime scene. You were just like, ah! Oh.
Yeah. Well, basically, she said, how are you? And I was like, I've just been in the toilet for 20 minutes trying to get milk out of my boob. She was great because she had kids and it was fun.
She was like, get one of these jumpers. It just keeps them down the weight. Stops them hitting you in the eye.
Oh. But yeah, the Kate Bush gig, it was quite weird. You know, it was very emotional kind of being out away from your baby anyway for the first time. And then you're watching this woman that I'd loved all my life playing her first gig in, you know, 30 years. That was pretty, 35 years, very emotional.
So we talked earlier about, you know, some of your favourite interviews, but is there anyone, like, who's still on your wish list? Is there anyone you'd just love to talk to?
I'd love to interview Jarvis Cocker in person, although I've interviewed on the phone a couple of times and he's, you know, very sharp and, you know, kind of... it's always nice to interview. I really like interviewing actors. I like going outside music because I've done so many music interviews. I interviewed Chiwetel Ejiofor when I was pregnant and quite hormonal. And I remember I was kind of having this stage that I just wanted to eat all the time.
And you ate him.
I ate him.
Sorry, just nibbled on his head.
I was just feeling quite kind of happy and all. I think this is one of the most beautiful men I've ever seen in my life. Is there having breakfast with me? I just wanted to stand up and jump down and going, yes, look at this is brilliant. Yeah, that's one too. Breakfast with a handsome man, Daniel Craig.
Oh,
over a croissant. Yeah. But you know, I think people are always at, you know, are you going to play Bond in the next film? Just ask him something else. You know, he's given that answer 300 times. You know, think of doing it another way.
What would you ask him? What would if you saw the Craig?
Would you like to have no? would you like a cuddle? Would you like a special cuddle with me?
Are you in a relation to Craig David? Just mix it up a bit. Just ask him something unexpected. Bet nobody's ever asked him that.
No.
Yeah. Now, what about driving music? I've got them CD disc changers in my car, so I'm always asking people, yeah, like, what's your desert island driving disc?
Abergold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Basically, lots of Bananarama, always. Yeah. Mm. Kraftwerk, always good on motorways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Helen? What do you like in the car?
I do like a big sing-along, so I like a bit of 80s pop as well. And Ellie has introduced me to the Mac as well, because we do a lot of, like, tour driving, and now I've been convinced that the Rumours album is the...
Rumours is literally the second best album in the history of the world, and it is the best album for having in the car on a Sunday.
So what's the first? Is it the best of Fleetwood Mac?
It's Graceland by Paul Simon.
Oh, that's...
I'm surprised as a music journalist you don't know that. I'm quite shocked. to be honest.
Do you know what? Paul Simon's complete solo back catalogue is regular in our car as well. One of the first things I did as a music journalist was review all Paul's. I was asked to review all his solo albums for one 700 word piece. I was like, oh my god, this is terrifying. But yeah, Graceland is brilliant, and that's one of my husband's favourites. It was Turn That Up.
Never gets dull. You can't beat a bit of cultural appropriation. Yes. Well, that's music chat, isn't it? We've identified the best album in the history of music and the second best. So yeah,
done. I'm just going to quit my job now.
Yeah,
no, music journalism is over.
Right, next segment, which is one of my favourites, is book chat.
Book chat.
Book chat.
Book chat.
Now, Jude, you've got a new kids book coming out.
I do.
It's very exciting, and it's about music.
It's called Pop with an exclamation mark.
Oh.
And it's the history of pop music for kids.
In Comic Sans?
Ooh. No.
No.
In Comic Sans, never.
Never.
That's
ever.
The rule of children's book writing.
It's a rule of life.
It's
a rule of life.
Rule of existence.
So it's like a non-fiction book, is it? It's like a...
Yeah, so it's kind of for kids, hence the name. And it's basically under 5 years, but I think, I'm 37 and I quite like looking at it. obviously, it's not an encyclopedic, philosophical treatise about pop music, but it's about what pop music can make you want to do and why people write it, and so it's about how it makes you like dancing and jumping and doing things, and how different kinds of people like to do it. Some people do it who are kind of shy, some people do it who are loud, some people do it for different reasons,
some people who are on a lot of drugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
People like dressing up, but it's quite nice. I think that's what good pop music really is. I think sometimes these days, she says, sounding old, but when pop music is made by the same sort of producers and sounds all the same, it sort of loses some of its, I think when I grew up in the 80s, you had Mark Almond from Soft Cell, who was as gay as a window with lots of makeup on. You had Adam Ant, who was, that's a kid's fancy dress costume, perfectly done there, kind of your dandy highwayman.
Do you think that it's a shame that it's kind of changed? I mean, I can't really... trying to think of who kids have nowadays, like
Rihanna
and like Meghan Trainor, I guess kids are like, but like she's not Adam Ant, is she?
There's people like Taylor Swift, who I know is pretty good role model, although I think she's almost kind of too goody-goody sometimes, but what has been quite fun with it is doing lots of references to pop music that the parents will like. So there is a little there's a child that's dressed up as Morrissey with some flowers, we have people looking in a big dressing up box to dress up like pop stars, but it's just a very simple, sweet little book, I hope, anyway.
So what's the book called again?
It's called Pop with an exclamation mark.
Yeah.
And it is out at the end of January.
Excellent. Well, that's book chat, isn't
book
it?
Book chat.
Jolly good.
Now,
It's time now for our Scummy Mummy Confessions, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Helen, do you want to kick us off?
Yes. So yesterday I was at home and my kids were running around and a neighbour came over, a kid neighbour, and they ran outside. So I thought they went outside. So I went out to look for them. And when I got inside, they'd run inside and my child had jumped off the bed, hit his head, and the other one had pooed his pants within like a minute.
Oh.
Like, how did that happen? So that's a really short and sweet Scummy Mummy confession. I lost my kids and then they had an injury and shat themselves.
It's like a Scummy Mummy mystery. Excellent. Do you have a confession for us?
Is it as a scummy mummy honorary member for today? I was at the farm last week with my son. He loves farm animals at the moment. He likes just mooing all the time. So we went to the farm and some turkeys came out of the turkey enclosure, and two of them started running after my son. Now turkeys are scary anyway, and they're quite big. They're the same height as Evan is. He's quite short, but same height as him. And he was running away from them, like upset. And the first reaction I wanted to do was just to take a video of it. I put it on the internet, and I was thinking that this would be really good on You'd Be Framed.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get my phone quickly enough, and then I realised I probably should just chase him in case he gets picked up.
Well, my confession for this episode is that very, very recently I was recording a podcast with an eminent music critic. And while she was telling a very funny story about her own child, my child did a gigantic poo in his nappy. And now she's sitting right next to me and I'm just waiting for the moment where she sniffs it and announces that she has to leave immediately. So,
is that why you were so quiet, Joe? You were just backing one out.
Yeah, just gently coiling the snake. There we go. So sorry about that, Jude, but thanks for coming. We have reached the end of the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Scummy Mummies. We're on Facebook.
Yay! Thanks, Jude Rogers.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And your book again, it's called Pop!
Pop! As a History of Pop Music for Kids.
And it's out in January.
In January, Fisherton Press, available from all good bookshops.
Can you pre-order it on Amazon?
Yes, you can.
But you shouldn't, because they don't pay the tax.
No.
All right, so...
Go to the website. Very nice.
All right, thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye!
Oh, I love Craig David.
Oh.
Oh, that was like a moment of sympathy for Craig David.
Let's be crazy.
2 minute silence, please.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.